The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, confidants, my educated, my hardworking, my book-loving confidants. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure. I am your host, Kelsey Dara. This is the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am so excited for our guest this week. She is a new friend of mine. Also, the subject matter that we are talking about is very near and dear to my heart. I'm so excited to introduce you to our guest this week, who is an educator. She was an English teacher, and she is a get this, confidants. Are you ready? New York Times best-selling author of Always With You, Always With Me, co-written with Kelly Mirther freaking Roland, and she's a mother. She shares a passion for literature with students, other mothers, and kids. Welcome to the podcast this week, Jessica McKay.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you so amazing. Much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too. So as I mentioned, we just met recently at the Eve Rodsky Luncheon. Eve was a guest of the podcast, author, brilliant business lady. And I was sitting across from you and we were all doing our little intros. And when you gave your story, I was like, I love this person. Aww. I love what she's doing. I love the messaging of your book. So can you tell me, like, obviously I want to know all about you. You're an educator, author, mom. Like, what do you do and why do you do it?
Oh, I love that. And by the way, the feeling is mutual. We were sitting across from each other, like you said, and immediately we connected after you were the first one. And I really appreciate that we connected right away.
Absolutely. You had a banging outfit on too. I remember that.
You had amazing makeup. We were connecting over.
We were like,
yes.
You.
Yes. So my story, I can't even explain why I do what I do. It was the kind of thing that is in me. Literally, when I talk to my sister, my brother, my cousins who I grew up with, they always talk about how from a young age, I was always the one playing school. I was always the one saying, let's do homework. Let's do reading together. And I would gather everyone together. Most of them did not like this part of our summers together, but I was just always wanting to learn and connect over, education. And so that was just always in me. And then later, like in high school, is when I really started falling in love with literature. Mm-hmm. I had an amazing English teacher my junior year. So that really sparked my interest in lots of different stories, hearing people's stories, and then writing my own story. So writing and literature really kind of came in high school. So it's no surprise when I went on to college, I majored in English, of course, like fell in love with it, not just the content, like everything that I was reading and devouring and writing, but the community around it. Like I loved all of the women. I went to an all women's school, Spelman College.
Oh, no way.
And
cool.
I loved all of the English majors, everyone, we were just such like-minded people. I really felt like I had found my people in my space. So when I look at my career now, it feels like just an extension of kind of what I've always done and what has always found me. So I feel very fortunate to have been able to follow my joy and follow my intuition and path that has always been kind of natural to me.
Yeah. It like definitely I resonate with being the one that was like, we're going to play classroom when I was little.
Really?
And bossing everyone around. And then I realized I think I'm too bossy to be a teacher.
Like, no.
I'm way too much of a control freak. Like if people
we
are, doing
are
things,
the most controlling people.
Are
teachers,
you?
You can do it.
Okay. Maybe that makes sense then, because if someone was out of line, I would have a meltdown. I could not handle it.
That's me.
Wait, what's your astrological sign? I feel like we got to get that out of the way.
I'm a Libra, September 23rd.
Oh, okay.
What are you?
I'm a Leo, but Libras are my favorite people. Very balanced. Makes a lot of sense that you're an educator. You want the logic. You want the truth. Makes sense.
Yes, I want balance. I want peace. But teaching and being a parent, all of the things in life have taught me how to go with the flow a bit more. So I've worked on that.
The go with the flow is something Libras, and I think women have, especially just this, it's a strength and a patience that I wish I had. It's a quality I admire so much with people that just don't have that block. Like you guys just have a different view on life of empathy and being able to see it from another perspective. Like you guys are just the best.
Well, it's a work in progress. Like I said, I also have a very controlling and like you said, the word bossy, that is definitely me too. But just in recent years, really the power of meditation and surrendering and all of that has helped me out.
We love a Headspace app, not sponsored.
Exactly.
So tell me what were you teaching when you decided you wanted to be an educator?
I was actually, so right after college, I went into, I think it was an internship or my first job at a magazine. I said, I want to be a writer. This is what I want to do. But teaching was always in the back of my head, but I wanted to do it. I knew I wanted to do it later because to me, educating children is like a lifelong thing. I never wanted to be that, you know, and there's no judgment, but I didn't want to, my philosophy of educating wasn't like teach for America 2 years and then leave. The educators I grew up around were like lifelong educators. So in my mind, I said, teaching is like a forever thing. Let me do that later. But again, these things find me. The magazine I was at closed, it crashed. And at the same time, someone introduced me to this school in DC where I'm from, whose mission I just really loved. It was an all-girls school in Southeast DC. And the way they modeled their school as a new school was really phenomenal and aligned with me. And they were looking for an English teacher. And it just, you know, kind of all worked out. So I taught middle school English for 2 years, then went on to grad school in New York.
Oh, wow.
And ended up teaching elementary school. So I fell in love with that. And then when I moved to LA, I got the perfect in-between. I taught fifth grade for most of my career, which was that perfect in-between of what I had done middle school and, you know, younger second and first grade. So that's pretty much where I lived for most of my career.
I was going to say, like, English, I was a literature kid. I was a liberal studies, like, definitely. Maths and sciences, I cheated. I got kicked out. I got suspended my principal literally told me, you should not take a senior math because I don't trust that you could get through it without cheating. And I was like, you're correct, sir. If I don't need to do it, I won't. So, math, numbers, not my thing, but books and writing. I mean, you can't see all the books that I have, but I have like books are so special to me. And a kid that I went to elementary school with who we like, you know, did K through, I don't know, eighth or ninth grade together. He like DM'd me once I started like, you know, getting followers. And he was like, hey, he's like, you probably don't remember me. I was like, of course I remember you. And he was like, I always remember you as a girl that would stand in the library and sniff books. Like, oh my, what? Why was I doing that?
But also,
yes, I like, kinda, I was obsessed with books. I still am. There's just so something so special to me about like the feel of a book and like.
Yeah.
Are you an audiobook person? Because I'm trying not to be, but I'm kind of turning into an audiobook person.
Yes. You know, for me, the bigger transition was going from, you know, touching an actual book to reading on my iPad. That was a big transition.
E-reader, yeah.
And I resisted it. The only thing that got me to make that leap was reading at night and having to like get up and turn off the light. So the iPad works for that. Audiobooks, I haven't gotten into.
Stay away. Don't do it.
As much. I try and then I find myself like keep trying to rewind and it just doesn't work. It's not the same to me, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's weird because I love podcasts. So yes. I would think that they would work, but...
Well, I think it's dependent on the author, right? Like, I listened to Eve's book through audiobook on a ski trip. Oh. I was, like, by myself. I went skiing, and I had her in my ears, and I was like, she's so encapsulating and, like...
Passionate.
And so I think it depends, because I've listened to some other ones where I am, like, snore city.
Yeah,
but...
you know, that's what it is. I think if you're reading or listening to someone who's the author reading their own book, it's different, because...
Yes.
My book club, we were reading.
I was just gonna ask if you're in a book club.
Oh yes. I love that. It's my favorite thing these days. Just started. But anyway, Alicia Keys, everyone was saying they listened to it on audiobook and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I loved the actual book, but everyone was raving about their audiobook experience. So then I switched once we got into some fiction books. And there was someone else reading. And I was like, you guys said audiobooks were cool.
Yes.
And I was like, this is not. But if I had done like listening to Alicia Keys or from what I understand now, Viola Davis's book, listening to her is amazing. So I think that is the key. I'll give it another try.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm so glad. I don't think I've ever had anyone on the podcast where I could just book nerd out. Like,
oh yeah.
I'm just like discussing the joys of reading. I've never like, I'm so hyped to have this conversation. I'm really interested. If the confidants, definitely leave a comment below if you're a book ho like we seem to be. Are you an audiobook? Are you an e-reader? Are you a hardback cover? I'm dying to know what the kids
all
are doing these
things.
Days. Well, speaking of books, someone here wrote a book that was recently a New York Times bestselling author. What is the idea behind Always With You, Always With Me? Because it's a children's book,
Yes, it's a children's book. But I think the cool thing and the unique thing is that it really does feature the mom in this book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, check it out, Google it, but I'll also show it here.
Yes.
For YouTube viewers. There's a mom on the cover with her child, and that is very rare in children's books to have the mom have such a prominent feature in the book. So it's basically the days and the week of the life of a child and mom, but the child with a working parent, and that is my story. I would get up. In fact, just this morning, my kids got up pretty early and we got to school pretty early. And I said, oh, this is probably the earliest you've ever been to school. And my oldest said, no, it's not. He still remembers when my early teaching days, the school I was at had a daycare for teachers' children.
Wow.
And he remembers getting there super early with me. So anyway, this was my story. It was Kelly's story of, you know, whether in her case, traveling for work, in my case, just not always being there in all of the moments, or maybe having to go back to work. There's one page where the mom is there on a field trip, but then has to go right back to work and can't stay and linger or take the child home early. Mm-hmm. So we just decided to tell this story because, again, we also realized it wasn't told. Like, there aren't many books, you know, as I've said and established, I have read almost every children's book. My children devour books. And every book tells the story of children separating and going off to school or separating in their own way, but not separating from parent because parent has to leave. Mm. And I think that's a whole different story to tell. Mm. So we decided to tell it.
This is hitting on like some core motherfucking wounds for your girl over here. I think I shared with you at the luncheon.
That's right.
With a mom, 365, mm-hmm. 7 days a week. Like I always tell the story about, we'd be on like a ski vacation. She would be on above the clouds on a chairlift on her cell phone. Like she's not dead. She is a business owner, you know, the boss, that's the woman from the day I was born, like I was raised by a caretaker who is more like my mother than my mother is my mother.
Wow.
I think she's pretty comfortable with me. She's heard that so many times at this point and she knows, you know, she would have to chase my caretaker down the street when she would come home at night because I'd be bawling my eyes out wanting my Marie and my mom would chase her down. Please, Marie, come back. She won't stop crying. She won't stop crying. And so there was my sister and I. So we both grew up with a working mom and we just didn't know any different. We had no idea that this was not the norm back then, you know, the 90s, but now it is working moms all the time. And
all the time.
It's so true what you say about there not being any books that explain and highlight that this is a thing. Like we see moms at home doing the feminine duties, the love, the care, and how can that be possible and still be a working mom? So I wanted to get your opinion on the thoughts of like, how do we as a society view working moms?
Yeah, I love that. And I love hearing you, you know, you mentioned it as like a womb and something that you had to work through. The goal of this book and kind of like my one of my missions through talking about it really is to normalize it and to create a new narrative around it so that, because as a mom, you feel guilt all the time. As the child, you may feel like, oh, I'm not always feeling, you know, like I'm getting the attention. And so there's this like narrative that can often feel negative. But I wanted to, and Kelly and I talked about like really redefining a mother's love and what it can look like. Because a mother's love can look like being out of town and handling the things at home. You can do that and your child can feel loved in that way as well. It can be, you know, you having your passion, as Eve talks about, being in your unicorn space and, you know, you left the most amazing dinner for your child. And that is love. Love isn't necessarily always the physical proximity. It can be you pour your love into this bracelet that you made. And the child isn't always with you. And they, you know, so this child made the bracelet for the mom and that's love. So we are really working to redefine that for so many people. Because again, through the work of so many women who were at the table with us and Eve and in general, to answer your question, there are so many stories and new ways where we feel that we can do both, but also be okay with not doing both all the time. And I think that's the most important thing is sometimes there will be moments where, you know, you're in this case, and I think share this later, but reading the mom was out of town, but she was still happy. You know, she was in her space and I'm sure your mom felt that way too. But then again, there's a page where she's in the car crying because she feels sad. And so just like really, again, exposing and showing that it's normal to have this range of emotions, I think is the work, not one extreme or another, but understanding that we can experience all of the emotions.
Right.
But at the end of the day, there's still so much love in the family and in the home.
I would love to get a reading, an excerpt from the book. But before we do, you have to ask, how the heck did Kelly Rowland get involved as a co-author? Because like, what an amazing partnership. And also, like you mentioned, different point of view of what kind of like working mom. So you really do have two great examples.
Yes. Well, I am so grateful to have her as a partner. We connected through our children. So my middle child and her oldest are in the same grade at school. They go to school together. And so we kind of formed a natural organic connection through the two boys. And so we started hanging out to kind of together on our own. And once we were chatting sometimes over coffee or tea or sometimes going to meditate, our own stories and emotions were exchanged, and we realized that we were going through the same thing as these busy modern moms trying to do it all, take care of ourselves, take care of our homes, and work as well. And so we said, you know what, let's do this. Let's write a story and put it together. And so then we connected with, and it's, this is a very simplified version of it, because let me tell you out there, I know you're working on your manuscript too. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, there are challenges, but we persisted. And, and so the short version is that we were able to connect with Rhoda Ahmed, who has, she's also a best-selling children's author, but also now has her own publishing company.
Oh, amazing.
And that led to, you know, other arrangements where we were able to get our publishing deal and really execute and manifest this dream of ours. So it's all, it's just a dream come true. Kelly is amazing. I'm so grateful for her partnership. The book features a, what was really important to both of us, but especially to Kelly as a singer and songwriter, was to have a refrain. And so I also believe in that, for the goal being to normalize and reassure and kind of be this balm of a book where you are soothing children and soothing moms who feel the guilt that there's something repetitive about the language. So in the book, there's this repetitive refrain all throughout it. And so when we read it to children by the end of the book, they are saying it. You know, we each read to our son, they're in different classes now. So we read to our different classes. And by the end, they are reciting the refrain. We're like, yes, mission accomplished.
Job done. Well, we'd love to hear the refrain. Would you mind giving us a little reading?
Of course.
Shout out to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. My confidants, you guys know I have recently been going through just an absolute, just wild mental health re-uptick, refresh. And I would not have been able to do that without my counselor, who I love, at BetterHelp. What's interfering with your happiness? What's preventing you from achieving your goals? I personally knew I had this ketamine therapy journey starting soon, and I was so nervous, and I needed that person, that third party, that doctor who knew what they were talking about to help me get prepared for that environment, as well as reintegrate all of things I've learned back into my daily life. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling. And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. And you can start communicating with them in under 24 hours. There are licensed professionals and counselors who are specialized in areas such as self-esteem. Ugh, who doesn't need it? Grief. Oh God, things are so hard. LGBT matters. So gay. Family conflicts. Mom. And anger. And depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, and trauma. Anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting counselors in all additional 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/CI. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/CI.
The weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortless, effortlessly
chic
year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
My favorite thing to do is reading.
Oh my gosh. Books. And again, this will be linked below. Definitely check it out. Always with you, always with me. A live reading.
Yes. All right. And this is also on audiobook. Kelly reads it. So I'll add that too.
Yes.
It's a good one.
Yes.
She reads it so beautifully. So this is the Tuesday page, and it goes by days of the week, but this is one of my favorite ones. Today, I'm on a business trip. I march onto the site where we will be breaking ground and smile as I envision my design coming to life. As I work, I see your magic traces. That gets me thinking that I can't wait to see what you'll be when you grow up.
Aww.
I hope you will remember the words I say to you. When I leave for work, you may think I'm not around, but if you look closely, you'll see I can be found. Traces of magic here and there show that we are an inseparable pair. Always with you, always with me. Mommy and child together will be. So that is Tuesday, each day ends. I always say I need to give people warnings. I forget to give that little heads up.
You do. I was not
prepared. So many moms have told me. Oh,
it's so sweet. I literally have goosebumps. I don't think you can see it through the camera.
Oh,
but
my
like,
God.
It was like working mom, also doing a job that you typically don't see women in.
Yeah.
Like architecture, construction. And then for her to be like, I'm thinking of you while I'm at my job. I'd never considered that my mom might be thinking of me while she's at her job. And
It's just a story. So kids know because they have no idea the emotions on our end.
Right.
And so now I think this one, I'm proud of us for sharing this story and helping children understand the minds of the parents. So then it doesn't feel as icky and hard. And I think a secondary goal of this is to be a role model for, you know, what you want to be when you grow up. Like that's why I love this part of our story and this page, because it's an example of you, again, going back to Eve and unicorn space, what it looks like to have your own space. Yeah. We're not always just wearing the mom hat. It's that we wear so many other hats. So
that was so epic. Thank you for doing that reading. It was so special. I'm like,
thank
is it weird that a 31-year-old has it on her bookshelf just with no kids? Like, healing like childhood wounds. Cool. But I think what my mom instilled in me being a, you know, capital M mom was so much of why I think I'm able to be successful and like run business and do things today. And like,
I always say she's going to be working until she dies. Like, she will be on the computer, on her phone, in her, on her deathbed, like, working. And I love that about her, because she will always say that she works because not only does she love it, but she does everything for her family. And we feel like, you know, and my sister works with the business, so it always ties back to family somehow. And it makes me wonder, you know, when you were doing the book and, you know, when you've had busy schedules back in the day and with all your kids and your home, it's like, did you ever feel like the mommy guilt that you talk about? And maybe you can explain like what it is and how you personally get through it.
Yes, definitely. Feel it all the time. I go to bed like replaying things in my head, you know, just thinking, oh, I should have been more present for that. I should have had my work computer away while I was like really tuned in and listening to what my child was saying. That happens all the time. After I taught for probably a decade, I took some time after when I was pregnant with my third child and I was home, and then went into a job in admissions at a new school. So we were basically in startup mode, working around the clock, especially the admissions team, because we were admitting three whole new grades. So, and I had, my Chase was probably like 1.5. I had my newborn, and then my oldest was 3, and it was nuts.
God.
And then this job working around the clock, my husband working same, like all in. We live in LA without much family or, you know, built-in support. So there were so many times where I was distracted and just, you know, just trying to survive. We were just doing our best. And I think it was around this whole time that I described like the beginnings of the book where I started meditation. In fact, Kelly and I did that together for a while. And so I think meditating and taking that time to myself is really what helped me get rid of the guilt. Cause I realized there were, you know, certain mantras I would say to myself. There were certain, it was just a different level of peace where I was able to remind myself, Jessica, you're doing your best. And that is how you know you're a good mom. Just the fact that you care, just the fact that you are thinking about them. You may not get it exactly right all the time. Nobody does, but, you know, those were the spaces that I really learned to celebrate myself, honor all of the effort that I am putting in, and then try again the next day.
And I wonder, do you, are there like, you know, being a childless person, I can pick up and go, and all I have to think about is my cats, right? You know, I said they can pretty much take care of themselves. They're on automatic feeders, automatic litter box. They're fine. But are there like non-negotiables for you that you've had to implement or set or think about when you're like working? Like I have to do at least this much with my kids, or does that set us up for failure because we can't always follow a rigid set of wants?
That's a good question. I think in my case, you know, I'm not the like traveling kind of working mom. So I can imagine for someone who has different hours or travels a lot, they might have some, like, I have to be home for dinner or I have to. But in my case, my career has always been pretty child-centered. And so even when I'm working, I've been able to combine my children with, you know, I've always been in child friendly environments. So I wouldn't say I have non-negotiables other than that built in, like working in spaces that allow room for me to be a mom, which I'm lucky that has always been the case because I work in schools. So being able to, you know, again, the school I taught at had a daycare for children, for teachers' children. And then when I moved on and worked in admissions, still it's a school. It was a secondary school. So not as like little kid friendly, but still, my boss loved children. Aww. I remember sitting down whenever we would have our meetings. She would always, and she's also a mother of three. Her children are older, but she always said, "How are you? How are your people? Mm. Like, how are Carter, Chase, and Claude?" She knows their names. She really, we would spend the first couple of minutes like exchanging stories about our children and showing pictures and updates. Yeah. And then we'd get to business. Mm. So I think for me, it really is being in a space that allows room for me to be my whole self. Because if I don't have that, then I can't focus on the other things.
Right. And you bring up such a good point about having these spaces that are child friendly, or even just have like emotional space to speak about child care and child life. And I wonder if you have any tips for new moms that are maybe going back to work for the first time and they're freaking out and they miss their kid. And what advice could you possibly offer that might help soothe or balm? I like how the way you said it's balm. Besides obviously reading this book.
Yes. First of all, get the book.
Like pull up.
I know. But I would say also, this is something that it's so simple. But I wish I had told myself or heard it more and more, and that it is going to be okay. Like, I just promise it will be okay. There are going to be rough days, again, like the page in the book where you're tearing up, but even that is okay. That shows the love and connection. But I would also say post, you know, COVID quarantine year of 2020 and 21, like where we were all in homes doing it all together. I would say, I think the return to work now can look different. And so another tip I would have is use that time period as leverage for negotiation and flexibility. And because I think one silver lining and good thing that perhaps came out of that time is that employers really saw us in all of our spaces and children on our laps and crying in the background. So there was no hiding it anymore. And so I think now a new mom going back to work has a different kind of story and leverage that versus like when I had to do it or when someone else at a law firm or at a company where it just wasn't spoken about. So now put it out there, and I think just embrace your whole self, and others, people in your workplaces will embrace it with you because they had no choice during those years. And like, let's keep that going.
You bring up such a good point too, that the pandemic like shifted availability. Like, mom can always be around. Dad's right in the other room. Like, I have to imagine for kids that the conversation would look different than the way you speak with like your boss or your coworkers about why is mommy not around so much, or why is mommy going back to work. So how do you speak to children brains about the idea of more separation or more work? Separation's hard, but like, more of like mommy needing to work.
I think, speaking of the name of your podcast, I think speaking in a confident way, like again, normalizing it, sharing stories, sharing like, this is what I do because I love it. Like you said, your mom had her why, and always explain why. And then the kids, I think, will understand, oh, you know, just like your passion is building Legos, this writing is my passion. I'm going to, and then I think the kids end up, in my case, my kids are so proud of me for reaching a dream. And your book is out. Like, oh, look at this.
That's
we were
so
at the LA Times Festival of Books and they were there.
Oh my gosh.
It's that like, and they were cheering us on. And it's just so cool to see them proud of you. Again, role reversing and flipping it. So, I think we just always have to kind of watch how we're saying it, not always being worried like, oh my gosh, I have to bring this bad news to you. I'm going to work. I'm going to separate. But just say it confidently. Say it as if it's like, matter of fact, this is what it is. This is why I do it. I've always loved writing. I've always loved sharing stories. So I'm about to go do that in my office for about an hour. You can go do your mini unicorn space and do something you do for an hour. And then we'll come back and let's talk about it. So, yeah, I really think that handling it in that way helps them, because kids go with the flow and they'll say, okay, you know, cool.
Yeah. They're like, I go do what I want for an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. What do I want to do? Yeah.
I'll see you later and you're fine. It's like if they fall, if you freak out, then they start crying more. Mm-hmm. But if we just accept that it's normal and we're all going to be fine, then they're going to be fine too.
Mm-hmm. And I can't say shit because, like I said, I don't have kids, but my best friend in the whole world just had a baby during the pandemic and they moved from New York City to upstate. So they're kind of in this like cabin in the woods, like surrounded by nothing.
Oh, wow.
And I was there for her birth. And then I came back, you know, during Christmas. And then I was just there for her first birthday. And that period of time between like 6 months to a year, she got like stranger danger because it was only mom, dad, you know, and in the woods. And then like these people came in and mom needs to go back to work in the city soon. And like, I know she's beyond stress. Hi, Lacey, by the way, you're probably listening to this. I hope you don't mind me putting your stuff on the internet. But I like a thing she and I often talk about is that there does feel like in those early stages that there are things that only mom can do, whether it be like breastfeeding or a baby's in the mom state, like the mommy love mommy stage. And so when you're flowing through those times of it feels like only mom can do it, how do you how do you get through that kind of unique niche-y stuff?
I always remind myself that it's so fleeting. So, you know, it's demanding on you because you're the only one who can do it, but it's going to fly by. And so just remind yourself, even though you have to be the one always on and like no one else can do it, just as cliche as it sounds, cherish that because you're going to blink and then there'll be the next stage. And I mean, this is a girl, the daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's always going to need your friend, Lisa, and other moms out there. They're always going to be needed, but in different ways.
Yeah.
So just try to like cherish it. Again, flip the narrative in your mind. Like, okay, this is actually a beautiful thing. This is so beautiful that I love someone so much that I cry when I miss her. Not like, oh my gosh, I'm crying so much. What am I ever going to do? Flip it and remind yourself how beautiful and amazing that bond is.
That's so special and such good advice where it like immediately makes it like a cute thing. You're like, oh yeah, this is just like really, this is gorgeous that this love and emotion can exist and, you know, hormones rebalancing, all that good stuff, I'm sure is part of the process too.
Totally. But
It reminded me too of some conversations I've had with her about sort of this like mommy activism too, where she's really starting to teach her daughter like, hey, things in the world are going on that women need to like fight for their rights, you know, that we need to fight for equality, that like there are things happening in the world that mom needs to be a part of too. And do you feel like, especially in the time that we're living in now, that like you find yourself having that conversation with your kids of just also like, and I don't know, because I don't know when you're supposed to talk to kids about like world trauma, but you know, is there something of like mom needs to also be or feel like they need to be sort of involved in this mom activism, especially as we realize like the pay gap and the gender gap and the exhaustion gap is like real?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think I believe, which is why my approach to children's literature is just that it's rooted in the philosophy that I think children are intellectually ready for more than we often give them credit for. And so, you tailor it according to the topic and what you feel like your child is ready to handle. But there are ways to say, you know, we're in LA, so a lot of times there's no hiding things. Mm-hmm. We're just driving and we see the homeless, huge problem in LA. And so mm-hmm. we talk about that. I just did that the other day. I'm like, okay, at some point there was some conflict or, you know, one of the children was unhappy about mm-hmm. their lunch or their meal. And I said, we're going to go on a ride. Ooh. And I did show them in order to remember, you know, to be grateful, to remember the bigger world and understand that. But then also to do something about it, to be activists. So we are always having conversations. Again, depending on the age level, like my oldest, he definitely can get certain things. And so I don't shy away from that. And it I think further to go back to the other conversation and question, ties into why I do what I do. Mm-hmm. And so I have a bigger purpose, and certain things I do want to fight for. I do the connection between mothers and children is really very important for me. So I'm going to think more about what I can do. What can I do about this formula shortage? What can I do about, you know, all of the crises going on with women and their bodies? And so, yeah, but again, for my younger child, it can start with what they see in front of them, homelessness and what we can do. So I definitely, I think I said it at the luncheon, that activism starts in childhood. And so, yes, I firmly believe that we should be having these conversations and removing the, you know, just the shield, I guess, between what adults do. And that's like grown up, heavy, serious stuff. And being more transparent, like, this is what I'm working on right now. And they're curious about it. They're little sponges. So, you know, it's definitely like your mom, you are this bad boss woman because of who your mom is.
Totally.
So it definitely has an impact. And even if they're not directly involved, but you share with them little tidbits, but then they go off to play, it's sinking in with them.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Jessica, I can't believe our conversation has flown by so quickly.
I know.
I could talk about this forever. Oh, are you kidding? You're such a great interview. And thank you so much for putting so much of like your personal story into this. I think it's so heartfelt. Definitely will include the link below for the audiobook and the physical book. But where can people find you or your work? Where would you like to be found?
Thank you so much for having me, Kelsey, and for all of your amazing work with mental health and wellness for your confidants. I'm happy to share this time with you. My Instagram is Authoress Jess. So that's the main space. And I am really, my next phase will be going into schools. So again, that's where my work is. My heart is in schools. So we've done a lot of bookstore and Kelly has done a lot of TV, but I think our next phase this fall, especially around back to school time where emotions are running high, is to go into the schools. So
I love that.
We'll do some author visits there. And I would love your confidants to send me their school. If they have children or no children, send me those school names and we put that on our tour.
I was going to say, we got any principals, we got any teachers out there, we got any kids that are going to school. Definitely. Exactly. We'll definitely put that below. But Jessica, thank you again so much. I'm so glad we got in contact.
Pleasure.
And we're going to stay friends because we're both in LA. Yes. Absolutely.
Obviously. Let's go sniff books together someday.
Thank God I found someone like me, my person. All right, confidants, don't forget to check out Jessica's work and we will see you next week.